Recently, there was the first successful native title claim in southeast Queensland, which recognised that the Quandamooka people have cared for country for thousands of years, was proclaimed by the Premier of Queensland, Anna Bligh, and as a result of that, there are a number of questions that need to be asked about what that means. Perhaps you could just introduce yourself, Dale, and then I'll ask the questions.
Yeah. My name's Dale Ruska. I'm a Strabag Island original First Nation person. I'm a Magurrumpul Guri. I've been involved in the campaign struggle for Aboriginal rights recognition now for close to 3 decades. And I'm an ambassador for recognition of Aboriginal sovereignty.
What rights will the Quandamooka people have over the land of Minjerribah?
The rights sort of vary from parcel to parcel. There's some areas where we have exclusive rights. Those areas are nowhere near as large as the areas where we have non-exclusive rights. There's some areas where we'll be allowed to occupy. Our occupation will have to be done in accordance with local government planning acts and so forth. Then there's other areas where we'll have the rights to camp, to use the resources, non-commercial use. Then there's the areas where it's the joint cooperative management agreements for national parks.
On the places where there's exclusive native title, what kind of economic activity, you know, like fishing or tourism or mining or the arts, will the Quandamooka people be able to conduct on that land on Minjerribah?
Well, they've actually got to go through their planning for Indigenous business development, but with quite a lot of the consent determination area, it involves non-commercial activities with regards to natural resource use and natural resource exploitation.
In those, you know, the rights that you have, say, with the natural resource use, what rights have you been permitted and what rights do you think that have been extinguished? You know, what would you like?
Well, we're only permitted communal use, communal cultural use of natural resources. Yeah, we're not allowed to use it for commercial benefit or gain, and like natural resources, when I talk natural resources, I'm talking about the fisheries or marine resources. Then we've got the terrestrial resources, which is water and sand and trees and so forth.
Yes.
As far as what rights have been extinguished goes, I think there's the greater majority of our First Nation rights have been extinguished because of the majority of the land being earmarked for national park purposes.
Recently there was a national park declared by Anna Bligh in the southern part of the island. Did the Quandamooka people have any say or determination in how that park is going to be developed and, you know, where people will walk and what facilities will be there?
Well, I don't think it's actually got to that stage yet and how the park's infrastructure is going to be developed and how it's going to be managed. As far as the actual designation and declaration of national park goes on the island, the Aboriginal people didn't have a say in the process until after the state government had made the announcement and declared the national park and also announced the new bill for Strabag Island.
What input did you have? Because I understand that you, Dale, were originally a claimant under the native title process. But as a First Nation person, what input did you have in this recent native title determination?
Well, it's a hard question to answer because originally I am still a claimant now and my family group are still registered as claimants of the Native Title Claim Group, I was the original applicant for the first claims lodged on behalf of our people. And for the first 10 years or so, I've played in a fairly intense role with coordinating the claim and going through all of the consultations with our people to have that claim registered. And recently, due to, when I say recently, the last 8 or 9 years or so, due to losing faith in the native title process and feeling that it was going to be totally disadvantageous and unfavourable for us as original First Nation people, we tried to more or less remove ourselves from the native title claim process, but we were unable to. Then we sort of played in the first half of after 2000 up until about 2005, we only played a minor role because of major issues we had with regards to the process and structure that weren't being addressed and till this day have never been addressed appropriately. But then in the second half of the 2000s up until about 2010, we started to get involved as a family group in trying to direct the claim or re-steer the direction of the claim to a position that was going to be more advantageous and favourable to Aboriginal people as a whole. And most recently, in the time coming up to the development of the Indigenous land use agreements that were being proposed at the time for settlement, we raised lots of issues of concerns in relation to the content of those agreements and also made a number of proposed recommendations for changes which would be beneficial to ourselves. And yeah, they were virtually not addressed by the Native Title Services legal representatives. And at the recent points of authorisation, myself and my family group and other individual members of the community, in only a minority of the community sector, I should say, we represented. We played the role in opposing settlement of the consent determination, and we maintained our position of opposition, and we didn't actually consent to the conditions of the Indigenous land use agreements and the consent determination.
Can you go into a bit of detail about some of the issues that you had with the native title claim?
Well, the original claim that our people lodged back parallel to Mabo was about trying to get recognition of our First Nation sovereign rights, and in that recognition giving us more authority and control over our environment and our natural resources in our environment and how they were utilised and exploited, but also giving us more recognition as the rightful owners of the place, and in gaining that rightful recognition, giving us more control of our autonomy in relation to our place and ourselves as a people. The Native Title Act itself disadvantaged us and disempowered our peoples and their ability to be able to progress trying to get recognition of that First Nationhood. Then we more or less fell into the process of Native Title, which wasn't about giving rightful recognition to Aboriginal First Nation rights, but more so about validating the rights and interests of all the other parties that were registered under Australian common law. And as it progressed, it was quite obvious to some of us that the validation issue was a major issue, and our agreement to validation meant that we were actually, in a sense, legalising all of the many injustices that have been committed against Aboriginal people and our place throughout the history of white colonial occupation.
And can you explain the difference between having sovereign rights and having native title rights?
Well, sovereign rights means recognition of our First Nationhood, and in gaining that recognition of our First Nationhood, we'd enjoy the same entitlements and benefits of sovereignty as any Western country or Western owners of land would. there's clear definitions in international law which relate to First Nation rights and the rights of Indigenous people. Yeah, but that compared to native title rights is only a bundle of rights, and it's more about, like I just mentioned, ensuring that all the rights and interests of all other parties are validated and enshrined in law. And it's Australian common law, which is the law which is holding the weight of this country at the moment. And Aboriginal rights and Aboriginal law isn't incorporated or recognised through Australian common law processes justly.
Was there informed consent to the native title determination by the Quandamooka people?
From the people that were involved, which was mostly a sector of the island's residential community, they believed that it was informed consent. Some of us questioned whether it was informed consent, because the detail within the Indigenous land use agreements that were or that have been settled was quite complex and very legally structured, and it involved quite a lot of issues and quite a lot of different parcels of land. And the process that was used to obtain informed consent was more or less, from some of our opinions, a rushed process. It was to ensure that we met the court imposed timeframes that resulted from the court orders, and it was more so about responding to what the state government and the other major interest parties were indicating that they were willing to accept as an agreement prior to them agreeing to a consent determination of native title rights. And if I could just refer to, advice that was given to us by Queensland South Native Title Services legal representatives some months ago, and at the beginning of this year, in February, when we started raising concerns over the issue of validation and the issue of being forced to compromise our rights through imposed timetables and dictated outcomes. Yeah, this was just an example of the response that we got. Your concerns and objections with respect to the validation and compensation clauses, particularly your assertions around sovereignty issues, were noted at the meeting. And whilst I acknowledge and truly understand the difficulty you and others might have in relation to the activities that the state may have invalidly carried out on country, the claim group is faced with the uncomfortable fact that the state will not consent to your native title nor offer a benefits package for the Quandamooka people unless and until the group agrees to validate any of its invalid future acts and releases the state from any native title compensation liabilities. And just in consideration of that, and in consideration of the Native Title Act, any activities that occurred after 1975 were or should be compensatable. Any activities that occurred after the Native Title Act was introduced in 1994 are without a doubt compensatable. The compensation that was offered to our people, many of us consider it as being just absolutely appalling, considering the cost of loss, and that's no understatement, the cost of loss that we as a people have faced throughout the last four or five generations, which have resulted from colonial occupation of our land.
Recently, there have been some changes on the island to the infrastructure that's there. For example, there's been an extensive upgrade of the gorge walk at Point Lookout. Who did that work, and were the Quandamooka people consulted, and who paid for it?
Well, I know that the upgrade occurred on land which is held under the authority of local government or Redland City Council. Upgrading process was put out to tender. I was personally involved in sub-tendering as a contractor on the island to try and win the contract to provide some employment back to the local Aboriginal youth. The process for selection is just the normal processes that they use in considering competitive tenders, and it would have been paid for by the local government, who has the authority over that parcel of land, which is Redland City Council.
This wasn't a question that I had previously thought of, but I know that when local government authority like the Redland Shire, when they want to do an upgrade such as this that, you know, relates obviously to the tourism industry, it's of a major benefit, particularly to existing businesses on the island, especially at Point Lookout, because it brings people, and those people spend money there, and they make some, you know, profits by it. And but I was thinking, you know, all these upgrades in the future, and currently they're expensive, and the only power that the local government has to raise finances for that is through the rates that, you know, that it raises against people who live on the island. So in effect, the people that come to the island as tourists are not really paying for the infrastructure. It's the people who are actually living on the island. And I was wondering what your comment would be upon that, especially in the future, that has been defined for the island by the state government, that, you know, tourism is a major, you know, avenue that they're thinking that they're going to direct the use of the resources. I was wondering whether the Redland Shire is really in a position to make the improvements that need to be made for the public, the community, for the good of all people who live on the island.
Well, the Redland City Council is only going to be responsible for smaller parcels of land on the island, which are within the three townships and which relates to where some of the water reserves are. The majority of the land will revert over to national parks once the sand mining has ceased, and it will become the responsibility of state government. As far as the assumed sustainable economy of tourism being the solution for the island goes, already many of the island's residents are speaking out and letting the state know that we believe that tourism on its own is in no way going to be able to ensure a sustainable economy for the whole of the island residential community. The state government at present is going through a process which has resulted from the announcements to end sand mining on the island, which is called the North Stradbroke Island Economic Transition Planning Process. And in that planning process, they've identified four major industry action areas which need to have focus. Those four areas are the first one being ecotourism, the second one being indigenous business, the third one being education, and the fourth one being all of the other potential economic areas that are yet to be identified. Local groups have requested that those four areas be broadened, and that Indigenous business not just focus on Indigenous business, but it should be Indigenous business and social economic development, and education should be expanded to be education, training and employment. So we're in very early stages as a community in trying to ensure that the state government planning process is reflective of our aspirations, and that the outcomes of it is actually going to be beneficial to the entire island residential community.
Can the Quandamooka people say what economic activities are to be conducted on the land, particularly the land that is subject to exclusive native title?
Those parcels of land, I'm sure that the claimant group or the native title holders will have a significant say over whether any economic activities at all occur on those exclusive possession areas. As far as the greater areas go, I think that they will be able to have some say over the minor economic activities, but the major economic activities such as sand mining or water extraction, I don't think that the native title holders will have much say at all over what occurs with that. It's important to note in just discussing the issue of economy that the island Aboriginal population, and it's probably no different to any other Aboriginal populations around the country, more or less sit at the bottom of the socio-economic scale. And for a long time now, Aboriginal people have been socially, economically disadvantaged, and the previous systems have been failures for ensuring that there's some economic balance there for Aboriginal people just in general. As a result of the consent determination, there's been no deliverance of any economic equity for the island's native title holders, and through this economic transition planning process that is occurring now through the state government's facilitation and consultation with community, where some of us are stating strongly that there needs to be major address to ensure that there's going to be economic equity for the island's original owners.
The state government in its announcement said that 9% of the land will be subject to exclusive native title rights. That land that they're talking about, does it include such places as Myora, Moongalba, parts of Dunwich? What are the actual areas where there are existing strong concentrations of Aboriginal people? What areas are under this exclusive native title rights that they're talking about, this 9% of the area of the land making up Minjaraba?
Yeah, I couldn't be actually precise on the answer to that, but I know there's a parcel of land on the southern end of the island where, for its cultural importance, is going to be an exclusive possession area. There's the areas around Dunwich, which is the 1 mile, Moongalba, and a bit further out towards or just past Myora, where it's going to be for Aboriginal occupation only, but our occupation will be controlled and regulated by the Local Government Planning Act. So yeah, it's not outright exclusive.
Last weekend, the state government put a full-page advertisement in the Australian newspaper naming various people who can take credit for native title being given. Why weren't you named, and how do you feel about that?
Well, as I explained earlier, for the last close to a decade, I've more or less expressed my concerns and my objections to the native title process and the native title outcome. My family's on the island here, which should be recognised for their credibility and for the fact that they are very respectable families throughout the entire Queensland region, and those families have played a role in the Aboriginal resistance struggle since it began. We've been involved in the land rights campaign, the establishment of the 10 embassy in Canberra, and many, many protests and rallies throughout the years to try and get just recognition of Aboriginal rights. And I'll name those families as being the Morton family, which is my main family group, my Gurrumpul family group. That's Morton, the same as in Moreton Bay, And my other family group is my Newfong family, and they're respectable families, but because of us maintaining our position and believing in it to the point where we feel we have to represent it, those old respectable families have more or less been ostracised. We've been made to feel as though we're not a part of the bigger decision-making process, to the point of where our views and concerns haven't even been taken on board, and we've been more or less isolated in the whole process, to the point of where some of us are made to feel as though we're outcasts in our own place. And it's a bit saddening to have to experience that, and especially to have those old family names ostracised the way that they have been, when most Aboriginal people around the place who know of any members from those families and the role that they've played in the Aboriginal struggle give the respect to those families which they're entitled to. So it hasn't been an easy process for us. And yeah, as far as myself goes and any recognition I should have received, well, I haven't really expected any, and I still to this day don't respect any, because I don't feel that native title is about giving just recognition to Aboriginal people for our First Nation sovereign rights.
As an old white fella, I remember the role that your mother played in the Tent Embassy in Canberra in bringing forward the issue of land rights. And that's, you know, they talk about native title rights these days, but for me it was always a struggle about land rights. And, you know, she was one of the main people involved in that, in making that a strong movement, and, you know, bringing some hope for the future. But
that's
I think that Eliza has another question, and if you want to add anything at the end, Dale, you know, by all means.
Just before we get to Eliza's question, I'd just like to state that, yeah, my mother Donna Ruska, she was very involved in the establishment of the Tent Embassy in Canberra, but the also another very respectable Aboriginal man from this island whose views have gone disregarded was also involved, and I'm sure he doesn't mind me naming him, but Dennis Walker was there as well, and he's a Strabag Island person who played a big part in the Aboriginal struggle to this date, and who has strong views with regards to Aboriginal sovereignty, but as I said, those views are disregarded and not heard by many Aboriginal people, and they should be heard on the value and the merit of which they hold. Yeah, so that's just important to have noted.
Yes.
I'm just wondering, Dale, what are your hopes or thoughts on the future?
Well, it remains the same for a lot of Aboriginal people, because And it's been stated by a prominent Aboriginal elder and Aboriginal leader of this nation that, and I quote him, it's Gary Foley, native title is not land rights, and reconciliation is not justice. And Aboriginal people, for a long time, since colonial occupation, or as many of us see it, colonial invasion, first began, we've been involved in a struggle, and the first part of our struggle for the first 100 years was after the first resistance and the first battles that occurred on our place was about survival. And after that 100 years, once the political climate changed a bit and there was a bit more acceptability to us being human beings that are entitled to humane treatment, our struggle has been about trying to get recognition of our rights. up until the late 1960s, the Aboriginal people struggled to have recognition of basic citizenship rights, which they won as a result of the 1967 referendum. After that, the land rights era began, and there's been a struggle ever since to try and get some recognition of our rights with regards to land. And like our people here on Stradbroke Island, we've been involved in that struggle now for some time. And like when you look at our recognition of land rights, it's been occurring since the early 1900s, when our people were trying to get recognition of our right to occupy certain areas on the island here. But when you consider it in that context, that struggle just continues. And we know that there's international law which gives proper recognition for Indigenous First Nation rights. We hope that this country's consciousness awakens and accepts the truth of the reality that there was original First Nation people here when the country was supposedly discovered by Captain Cook, and those people have been here right throughout the whole period of colonisation, or as many of us put it, in unlawful invasion. And if they can realise that and accept the truth, maybe they'll recognise our First Nationhood and give us what we are entitled to, what we deserve as the original owners and the original First Nation people of this land.
Thanks very much, Dale. This interview is going to be played on air tomorrow on 4ZZZ, and I don't know what the reception's like over at where you live on Stradbroke Island. I know I could pick it up at low tide at Deadman's Beach, but you know, if you walked up to the high tide mark, you couldn't pick it up. But anyway, we'll put it up on the web as well. But thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you both, Ian and Eliza, for allowing me the opportunity to share my beliefs. Thank you very much.
Okay. See you, mate.
Cheers. Bye-bye.